Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1077, Surveillance Valley Part 3, Cambridge Analytica, Democracy, and Counterinsurgency. This is being recorded on July 2nd of the year 2019. The series of programs that I am doing is titled after a very important book that will form, it has already been introduced into the discussion, and it will form much of the foundation of the discussion to come. That book is called Surveillance Valley, subtitled The Secret Military History of the Internet. It is authored by Yasha, Y-A-S-H-A, Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E. It is a very important book. Again, as I said, I would not say that it is the most important book I've ever read. I've read a lot of very important books, but I have never read a more important book. And I think, given the fundamental place of the internet and related technologies, mobile technology, the social media, to our society, and beyond that, our civilization. And I think those technologies and the modes of interaction that stem from them are such that I think understanding the internet, understanding this book, is fundamental to an understanding of the world we live in. And again, I get no money from this, but I think that reading the book Surveillance Valley and understanding the discussions attendant on that are fundamental for understanding the world we live in. If you have not read that book, then I think past a point it is impossible, and it will be impossible for you to truly understand the world into which we are proceeding. Even beyond what's in the book, things like the Internet of Things, in which, you know, refrigerators, ovens, toasters, all sorts of relatively mundane household items will be online. They will be surveillable, to coin the term. They will be hackable, to coin the term. But they don't have screens, so they won't receive periodic software updates. And this is going to prove an absolute nightmare. In this program, we're actually not going to deal directly with the book Surveillance Valley in this particular episode, but rather we are going to revisit the Cambridge Analytica affair, because I think it not only illustrates the very essence of the, frankly, sinister nature of the genesis of the internet, but it is exemplary of what the internet is really all about. In For the Record 1076, we noted in an excerpt from the Yasha Levine book, Surveillance Valley, that the internet was not a benign vehicle for communication and information. It is, in fact, a weapon. It was developed by DARPA, the R&D wing of the Pentagon, and the internet was part of an overlapping series of DARPA projects, and especially Project Agile, that led to the development of Agent Orange in Vietnam. The focal point of the internet was not benign communication and education and enlightenment. The focal point of the genesis of the internet, again, developed through the same series of overlapping DARPA projects as the development of Agent Orange. The focal point and the raison d'etre for the internet was counterinsurgency, That is a complicated and relatively dry-sounding term that masks the truly sinister nature of what lies behind that. Now, in the last program, we revisited excerpts of two miscellaneous archive shows. We revisited a program about the genesis of the Nazi Party, quoting or accessing information from the book Der Führer by Konrad Heiden, published in 1943. And we spoke about the genesis of the Nazi Party itself. It had as its starting point counterinsurgency as well. World War One in Germany ended basically with a socialist slash Marxist slash communist uprising in many, or uprisings in many of the large cities in Germany, Bavaria and Munich in particular. This resulted in, as one might expect, a military suppression of those rebellions, and as part of that, there was an assassination program put together by underground units of the supposedly demobilized German army. In addition to the overtly Marxist or socialist people that were involved in the revolution, people like Kurt Eisner and Rosa Luxemburg, many people who were not communists at all, including people like Walter von Rathenau, who was hated by the early Nazis and the Freikorps assassins because he was Jewish. He actually had much to do with attenuating the devastating effects of the British blockade in World War One. His efforts as an economic organizer, and he was heavily involved with managing the economy during World War One under the Kaiser, helped to ameliorate the effects of the British blockade. He actually was of substantive help, substantive assistance to the German nation during World War One. This, however, did not abate the hatred of the Freikorps and the early Nazis for Walter Rathenau. They had a chant in the beer halls, "Not ab den Walter Rathenau, die Gottverdammte Judensau." Crack down Walter Rathenau, the goddamn Jewish sow. And ultimately, they assassinated him. In addition to that assassination program, the Marxist uprising in Munich was infiltrated by an undercover German army intelligence officer who operated under the political department of the Reichswehr under General von Lassalle. This guy was Adolf Hitler. He infiltrated the revolutionaries in the Munich area, pretending to be one of them, and then after the military suppressed the uprising, Adolf Hitler then broke his cover and fingered the leaders of the revolution and key members of that revolutionary cadre, and they were then assassinated. Then Hitler, Ernst Röhm, who was a German army intelligence officer as well and the liaison to General von Epp, a key Freikorps leader, then infiltrated a moribund political party in Germany, nicknamed the Kaiser's Socialists because they had helped to drum up support. It was a front for ostensibly, or vehicle, I should say, for ostensibly drumming up support for the war effort during World War One in Germany's large socialist community. After the war, many undercover German army or Reichswehr intelligence officers infiltrated that political party, turning it into what was basically a German military intelligence front and a vehicle for reintroducing elements of the supposedly demobilized German army into civilian society for the purposes of fomenting political reaction. Then we took a look at a 1993 addendum to Miscellaneous Archive Show M11, Uncle Sam and the Swastika. This concerned Adolf Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf in late 1931. This speech won the sentiments of the German industrial and financial elite over to Hitler and the Nazi Party, whereas previously many of them had favored other conservative and or reactionary German political parties. Hitler's speech, and it was a very important speech, won many of them over. The essence of Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf was this, that democracy was undesirable because it led automatically to communism. The fundamental essence of that argument was a social Darwinist assertion that basically the people who enjoyed elite positions in industry or finance enjoyed those positions because of their superiority. They were superior and had manifested superior work, and that was why they were in the position they were in. If, however, according to Hitler, one allowed democracy, one would allow inferior beings who had not achieved that level of social status or industrial or financial success to redistribute wealth and to establish communism. The fundamental, the essence of Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf was that democracy equaled communism. Ipso facto, because it will allow people to democratically redistribute wealth, and that this will be counter-evolutionary, not counter-revolutionary, but counter-evolutionary, in that it would permit inferior beings to rise to the surface. And we're going to take a look at how the Cambridge Analytica affair really was the essence at one level of the genesis, the raison d'etre for the Internet itself, counterinsurgency. And again, the Internet came from the same series of overlapping DARPA projects as Agent Orange. It also will illustrate how, to an extent, the Internet itself and social media can function in a manner analogous to the German Nazi Party in Weimar Germany. It can be used as a vehicle for the political manifestation of fascism, albeit in a different manner. It also, in many ways, highlights how Facebook, the Internet, social media in general, can be used in a manner that is consistent with the contention of Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf. The Cambridge Analytica affair helped to defeat Hillary Clinton and was fundamental to the undermining of democracy in the 2016 election. Now, Hillary Clinton is a long way from being a communist, although you wouldn't know that to hear Donald Trump. And indeed, listening to the shrieking and carping of the Bernie bots and their ilk, you would think that she was an arch reactionary and that she was the antithesis of what they were. And yet, she was anything but a communist. However, the Cambridge Analytica affair, in its essence, illustrates how social media, and in this case Facebook in particular, were used in a manner consistent with the counterinsurgency genesis of the Internet, and which in turn manifested the fundamentally anti-democratic ethic of Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf. Now, one of the things that we're going to review aspects of the Cambridge Analytica affair, and keep in mind, again, the counterinsurgency genesis of the Internet. the counterinsurgency genesis of the Nazi Party, the anti-democracy, democracy equals communism contention of Hitler's speech before the industry club of Dusseldorf, because we're going to take a look at how the Cambridge Analytica affair really exemplified and manifested all of those things. Beginning with an article about the psychographic testing that Facebook disseminated to millions of Americans and how that was utilized by the SCL and Cambridge Analytica firms. The New York Times of January 19th of 2017 had an article by Mackenzie Funk, The Secret Agenda of a Facebook Quiz. And part of that read, "For several years, a data firm eventually hired by the Trump campaign, Cambridge Analytica, has been using Facebook as a tool to build psychological profiles that represent some 230 million adult Americans." And note the following. "A spin-off of a British consulting company and sometime defense contractor known for its counterterrorism psyops work in Afghanistan, the firm does so by seeding the social network with personality quizzes. Respondents, by now hundreds of thousands of us, mostly female and mostly young, but enough male and older for the firm to make inferences about others with similar behaviors and demographics, get a free look at their ocean scores. Cambridge Analytica also gets a look at their scores and, thanks to Facebook, gains access to their profiles and real names." Now, again, note that Cambridge Analytica is a subsidiary, a spin-off of a British consulting company. That firm is SCL. More about that in a minute. And described here, sometime defense contractor known for its counterterrorism psyops work in Afghanistan. The firm does so by seeding the social network with personality quizzes. SCL, that sometime defense contractor involved with counterterrorism psyops in Afghanistan, and now extending the same operational modality to electoral politics in the U.S. The foundation of that, counterinsurgency, basically. And an article about Christopher Wiley, who was the main whistleblower and also one of the primary employees of SCL and Cambridge Analytica, from the campaign blog of November 5th of 2018 by Kate McGee, M-A-G-E-E. "Cambridge Analytica whistleblower Christopher Wiley, it's time to save creativity." It's time to save a whole lot more than that. But noting again how Cambridge Analytica was spun out of SCL Group, a group involved with, quote, counterterrorism psyops in Afghanistan. Read counterinsurgency. That is the essence of the genesis of the Internet, which grew out of the same overlapping series of DARPA projects as Agent Orange in Vietnam. From this article, "Cambridge Analytica was a company spun out of SCL Group, a British military contractor that worked in information operations for armed forces around the world. It was conducting research on how to scale and digitize information warfare, the use of information to confuse or degrade the efficacy of an enemy. As director of research, Wiley's original role was to map out how the company would take traditional information operations tactics into the online space, in particular by profiling people who would be susceptible to certain messaging. This morphed into the political arena. After Wiley left, the company worked on Donald Trump's U.S. presidential campaign. And don't fail to note that. One of the things that should be noted in connection with the way Cambridge Analytica functioned in connection with Facebook in the 2016 campaign. And again, the New York Times story with which we began the discussion, the secret agenda of a Facebook quiz by Mackenzie Funk, those were dark posts. And quoting from that, one recent advertising product on Facebook is the so-called dark post, a news feed message seen by no one aside from the users being targeted. With the help of Cambridge Analytica, Mr. Trump's digital team used dark posts to serve different ads to different potential voters, aiming to push the exact right buttons for the exact right people at the exact right times. In other words, extending to the political process the counterinsurgency genesis of the Internet, or the counterinsurgency principle of the genesis of the Internet, and the basic modality of the SCL operations, counterterrorism or counterinsurgency. However, this was the application of this to the democratic political process in the U.S. This was the application of this to defeat Hillary Clinton, anything but a communist. And I think in this regard, the speech by Hitler to the Industry Club of Dusseldorf, in which he equated democracy with communism, should be kept in mind. More about the campaign blog from early, from November 5th of 2018 and Christopher Wiley's observations. It was Cambridge Analytica's shift from the battlefield to politics that made Wiley uncomfortable. When you are working in information operations projects where your target is a combatant, the autonomy or agency of your target is not your primary consideration. It is fair game to deny and manipulate information, coerce and exploit any mental vulnerabilities a person has, and to bring out the very worst characteristics in that person because they are an enemy, he says. But if you port that over to a democratic system, if you run campaigns designed to undermine people's ability to make free choices and to understand what is real and not real, you are undermining democracy and treating voters in the same way you are treating terrorists. In other words, extrapolating from both the counterinsurgency raison d'etre of the Internet, the counterinsurgency operations of SCL, the counterinsurgency genesis of the Nazi Party in early Weimar Germany, and the anti-democratic ethics, with a small d, of Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf, in which he equated democracy with communism. You are seeing the essence of all of those bundled together in the Cambridge Analytica affair. Now note that after the assassinations of not only the Marxist and socialist leaders of the various German Soviets, workers and soldiers councils, people again like Kurt Eisner, Rosa Luxemburg et al., as well as social democrats like the late unfortunate and Jewish Walter von Rathenau, then many of those undercover German army officers were infiltrated into a moribund political party, which then became a vehicle for fomenting reaction in German society. I don't think that it is much of a reach to see how Cambridge Analytica's methodology can be used online to create a similar fascist political manifestation, not by infiltrating people into a moribund political party, but by manipulating their perceptions, their hopes, their likes, again, using things like the psychographic ocean testing that Facebook submitted to a couple of 100 million plus Americans. Using that and manipulating this can be used to create a fascist movement or a disinformation-based political movement. Again, from the campaign blog and referencing Christopher Wiley's observations. One of the reasons these techniques are so insidious is that being a target of a disinformation campaign is, quote, usually a pleasurable experience, unquote, because you are being fed content with which you are likely to agree. One more time. One of the reasons these techniques are so insidious is that being a target of a disinformation campaign is, quote, usually a pleasurable experience, unquote, because you are being fed content with which you are likely to agree. Quote, you are being guided through something that you want to be true, Wiley says. To build an insurgency, he explains, you first target people who are more prone to having erratic traits, paranoia, or conspiratorial thinking, and get them to, quote, like, unquote, a group on social media. They start engaging with the content, which may or may not be true. Either way, it feels good to see that information, unquote. When the group reaches 1,000 or 2,000 members, an event is set up in the local area. Even if only 5% show up, that's 50 to 100 people flooding a local coffee shop, Wiley says. This, he adds, validates their opinion because other people there are also talking about, quote, all these things that you've been seeing online in the depths of your den and getting very angry about. People then start to believe the reason it's not shown on mainstream news channels is because, quote, they don't want you to know what the truth is, unquote. As Wiley sums it up, what started out as a fantasy online gets ported into the temporal world and becomes real to you because you see all these people around you, unquote. And whereas Mark Zuckerberg has, you know, basically said that he was shocked by the Cambridge Analytica affair and tried to downplay the awareness on the part of management of what was going on. Wiley dispels that, again, from the campaign blog. Facebook has known about what Cambridge Analytica was up to from the very beginning of those projects, Wiley claims. They were notified, they authorized the applications, they were given the terms and conditions of the app that said exactly what it was doing. They hired people who worked on building the app. I had legal correspondence with their lawyers where they acknowledged it happened as far back as 2016. Again, the attempt by Facebook to go, you know, well, we're shocked, you know, we had no idea this was going on and we'll never let it happen again, so basically, give us all your money. And as the dynamic or example that was cited by Christopher Wiley about how you can build an insurgency using Facebook and disinformation because people are seeing things that they like. I don't think, again, that it is a reach to see the Cambridge Analytica application as basically an internet slash online analog to the early Nazi Party, which was a vehicle for introducing agents, military intelligence agents, into German society in order to effect an insurgency, basically, to effect a political reaction. And I think that is basically what we are seeing in connection with the Cambridge Analytica affair. Again, about Facebook's supposed ignorance of what was going on. Wiley reiterates, or I'm reiterating what Wiley said here. Facebook has known about what Cambridge Analytica was up to from the very beginning of those projects. They were notified, they authorized the applications, they were given the terms and conditions of the app and said explicitly what it was doing. They hired people who worked on building the app. I had legal correspondence with their lawyers where they acknowledged it happened as far back as 2016. And something else to note here is that the Palantir firm, that is a surveillance firm that is deeply, basically it is inextricably linked with the intelligence community, and it appears to be the firm that developed the PRISM software. Now, Palantir maintains that the PRISM software that was leaked by Eddie Snowden was not their counterterrorism software. That was a different counterterrorism software called PRISM, which also supposedly differed from a counterterrorism PRISM software used by Germany, and yet another ostensibly different PRISM counterterrorist software used by NATO in Afghanistan. And I think it is not difficult to imagine that those are actually the same PRISM software. Again, as I have said several times, although Palantir officially maintains that their PRISM is not the PRISM, the Silicon Valley giants are nothing if not litigious, and it is difficult to imagine that another firm could have developed a counterterrorism software with exactly the same name, let alone three other counterterrorism softwares with exactly the same name. And note that NATO was using PRISM in Afghanistan, and that is where SCL, the parent firm of Cambridge Analytica, cut their counterinsurgency teeth, so to speak. Now, again, Palantir is deeply involved with surveillance technology disseminated not only to the intelligence services, but they've also been working with the Trump administration on applying surveillance techniques to the Trump administration's immigration policies.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
A New York Times article of March 27th of 2018 by Nicholas Confessori and Matthew Rosenberg, Spy Contractor's Idea Helped Cambridge Analytica Harvest Facebook Data. Now note that the top dog, so to speak, at Palantir is Peter Thiel, who also at one point was the largest stockholder in Facebook. He had much to do with bringing together an early capitalization of Facebook. At one point was its largest stockholder, although he has now sold a lot of his stock. He is a member of the board of directors of Facebook and is the top dog, not the CEO, but the top dog at Palantir. Peter Thiel is, again, an ardent supporter of Donald Trump. Has as one of his major political reference points a guy named Carl Schmitt, who was arguably the Third Reich's top legal theoretician and a major theoretical influence on the German Conservative Revolution that ultimately helped to spawn the Nazi Party, among other things. Peter Thiel is explicitly opposed to democracy because he feels that it is inimical to wealth creation. And again, I think that element of Peter Thiel's point of view is at one with the essence of Hitler's speech before the industry club of Dusseldorf. Basically, democracy equals communism because it will enable unworthy or inferior people to redistribute wealth. One of the reasons that Peter Thiel feels that democracy is undesirable is that he doesn't feel women should be allowed to vote. And again, Peter Thiel, major supporter of Donald Trump, is the top person at Palantir, and Palantir was deeply involved with the Cambridge Analytica affair. Again, from the New York Times of March 27th of 2018, spy contractor's idea helped Cambridge Analytica harvest Facebook data. It was a Palantir employee in London, working closely with the data scientists building Cambridge's psychological profiling technology, who suggested the scientists create their own app, a mobile phone-based personality quiz, to gain access to Facebook users' friend networks, according to documents obtained by the New York Times. The revelations pulled Palantir, co-founded by the wealthy libertarian Peter Thiel, into the furor surrounding Cambridge, which improperly obtained Facebook data to build analytical tools it deployed on behalf of Donald J. Trump and other Republican candidates in 2016. Mr. Thiel, a supporter of President Trump, serves on the board of directors of Facebook. Quote, "There were senior Palantir employees that were also working on the Facebook data," said Christopher Wiley, a data expert and Cambridge Analytica co-founder, in testimony before British lawmakers on Tuesday. The connections between Palantir and Cambridge Analytica were thrust into the spotlight by Mr. Wiley's testimony on Tuesday. Both companies are linked to tech driven billionaires who backed Mr. Trump's campaign. Cambridge is chiefly owned by Robert Mercer, the computer scientist and hedge fund magnate, while Palantir was co-founded in 2003 by Mr. Thiel, who was an initial investor in Facebook. And note that Steve Bannon was one of the top people directing Cambridge Analytica. He was described as something of a Svengali for Rebecca Mercer, Robert Mercer's very influential daughter. And ultimately, of course, Steve Bannon became Donald Trump's chief of staff. He is no longer in that position, but he is still doing much to put together neo-fascist slash populist groups all around the world, including in Europe. Something to be noted is the fact that at the very genesis of Facebook, there was input apparently from the intelligence community, and there was funding for Facebook from elements linked to InQtel, that is the CIA's venture capital arm. Again, from For the Record 718, or reviewing information from For the Record 718, a Guardian article from January 14th of 2008. By the way, this program, For the Record 718, recorded on Independence Day weekend of 2010, almost exactly 9 years ago. The article is by Tim Hodgkinson, H-O-D-G-K-I-N-S-O-N, with friends like these. I'm talking about some of the key people on board early with Facebook. Facebook's most recent round of funding was led by a company called Greylock Venture Capital, who put in the sum of $27.5 million. One of Greylock's senior partners is Howard Cox, C-O-X, another former chairman of the NVCA, that's the National Venture Capital Association, who is also on the board of directors of InQtel. What is InQtel? Well, believe it or not, and check out their website, this is the venture capital wing of the CIA. After 9/11, the U.S. intelligence community became so excited by the possibilities of new technology and the innovations being made in the private sector that in 1999, they set up their own venture capital fund, InQtel, which, quote, identifies and partners with companies developing cutting-edge technologies to help deliver these solutions to the Central Intelligence Agency and the broader U.S. intelligence community, or IC, to further their missions. More about this. This from the New Zealand Herald of August 8th of 2007. Facebook, the CIA conspiracy, by Matt Greenop, G-R-E-E-N-O-P. The second round of funding into Facebook, $12.7 million, came from the venture capital firm Acel Partners, A-C-C-E-L Partners. Its manager, James Breyer, was formerly chairman of the National Venture Capital Association and served on the board with Gilman Louie, CEO of InQtel, a venture capital firm established by the CIA in 1999. One of the company's key areas of expertise are in data mining technologies. Breyer also served on the board of R&D firm BBN Technologies, which was one of those companies responsible for the rise of the Internet in the first place. Dr. Anita Jones joined Facebook, which included, joined the firm, which included Gilman Louie. Dr. Jones also served on InQtel's board, and she had been Director of Defense, Research, and Engineering for the U.S. Department of Defense. She was also an advisor to the Secretary of Defense and overseeing the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, which is responsible for high-tech, high-end development. And again, she is immediately adjacent to the financing of Facebook in its initial in its second round of capitalization. So, again, note that in addition to people like Peter Thiel from Palantir, there are other elements either directly associated with or related to the CIA's InQtel venture capital arm who are involved with the initial capitalization of Facebook. So I don't think that the Cambridge Analytica affair could be seen as something of an aberration or something that was thrust unwillingly upon them. Something to note here, and that is the presence at Facebook of a woman she has since left named Regina Dugan, D-U-G-A-N. She was formerly the head of DARPA and also was a key person in charge of R&D for Facebook. And she, this article that I'm about to excerpt notes that Facebook had as it, in its Building 8, basically what was something of a recapitulation of DARPA, basically. Building 8 at Facebook's campus is meant to recapitulate DARPA and Regina Dugan, for a time the top person in R&D for Facebook, was formerly head of DARPA. Now, again, about Regina Dugan, about Building 8, which was meant to replicate DARPA, and about Facebook's R&D program to affect brain-to-computer interface. I've gone into this in other programs, and that basically will permit people, will permit the databasing of people's thoughts, the tapping of people's thoughts, not just the results of psychographic ocean testing, but the literal databasing of people's thoughts, and given things, given some of the technology, such as the neurophone developed decades ago, which enables things to be broadcast into the brains of certain targeted individuals, this technology would literally permit, certainly lead to a society of computer-controlled or artificial intelligence-controlled automatons in the people's thoughts will be tapped and databased. The Gizmodo blog of April 19th of 2017, article by Kristen V. Brown. Facebook literally wants to read your thoughts. And some of this. Facebook wants to build its own brain-to-computer interface that will allow us to send thoughts straight to a computer. What if you could type directly from your brain? Regina Dugan, the head of the company's secretive hardware R&D division, beginning again. What if you could type directly from your brain? Regina Dugan, the head of the company's secretive hardware R&D division, Building 8, asked from the stage. Dugan then proceeded to show a video demo of a woman typing 8 words per minute directly from the stage. In a few years, she said, the team hopes to demonstrate a real-time, silent speech system capable of delivering 100 words per minute. Quote, that's 5 times faster than you can type on your smartphone, and it is straight from your brain, she said. Your brain activity contains more information than what a word sounds like and how it's spelled. It also contains semantic information of what those words mean. More from that same Gizmodo blog. Brain-computer interfaces are nothing new. DARPA, which Regina Dugan used to head, has invested heavily in brain-computer interface technologies to do things like cure mental illness and restore memories to soldiers injured in war. But what Facebook is proposing is perhaps more radical, a world in which social media doesn't require picking up a phone or tapping a wristwatch in order to communicate with your friends, a world where we're connected all the time by thought alone, and which would permit the tapping and databasing of those thoughts and using neurophone-like technology, ultimately perhaps replacing those thoughts. This technology, and bear in mind again that Facebook's secretive hardware R&D division, Building 8, is intended to replicate DARPA, and that Regina Dugan used to head DARPA. It is absolutely a stunning technological horizon. More from the Gizmodo article. Facebook's Building 8 is modeled after DARPA, and its projects tend to be equally ambitious. And thinking about the counterinsurgency genesis of the Internet, how the Cambridge Analytica affair was in many ways the essence of the application of the Internet, the counterinsurgency, with the infused element of Hitler's speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf, in which democracy is equated with communism, and the counterinsurgency technology of the Internet and applications developed by Cambridge Analytica and SCL were applied from counterterrorism / counterinsurgency to counter-democracy and the defeat of Hillary Clinton, who was certainly not a communist by any stretch of the imagination. Now, something I have noted in a number of programs, including 1057, and came back to it in the series about socialists for Trump and Hitler. Brad Parscale, P-A-R-S-C-A-L-E, has put together people from the old Cambridge Analytica team for Donald Trump's 2020 campaign. Although Cambridge Analytica itself officially went out of business, it has been resuscitated, and there are people on its board linked to, among others, Eric Prince of Blackwater fame. And by the way, the brother of Betsy DeVos, who heads up the Department of Education for Reagan. The point being that people from the old Cambridge Analytica team have been put together by Brad Parscale to work for Donald Trump's 2020 campaign, with people like AOC, whose political foundation is Sekhat Chakrabarty and apparent acolyte of Subhas Chandra Bose, the Duce of Bengal, a man so well-placed in the fascist hierarchy of World War II that he networked with and got FaceTime with Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, Heinrich Himmler, the Emperor of Japan, and Prime Minister General Hideki Tojo. Sekhat Chakrabarty himself very possibly linked to Peter Thiel in our discussion in For the Record 1070 about Sekhat Chakrabarty's role with the Stripe online payment company and the funding consortium put together by Peter Thiel helped to capitalize that, our referential in this regard. But AOC, being advised now by, among others, Jeffrey Sachs, who was the chief person involved with putting together the economic program that sent Russia back to the Stone Age under Boris Yeltsin. AOC has some, I think, 3.5 million followers on Twitter, which has accorded her something like rock star status. It is the safest of bets that everything, every one of those people is doing are being carefully monitored by AIs, recorded and databased. And in the 2020 election campaign, I think we can expect that dark posts or something similar will be employed for those millions of Twitter followers of AOC, and they will be convinced that supporting Joe Biden or whoever winds up getting the Democratic nomination really is not a good idea, or that moderate Democrats, unquote, have to be opposed, which is something AOC is already doing. I think, barring a sea change, I think we can expect that there will be a dark post tsunami directed at, among others, the AOC social media followers by Brad Parscale, and the old Cambridge Analytica team, now recoalesced for Donald Trump's 2020 campaign. In For the Record program 1074, we noted how Facebook was deeply involved with the ascension of Narendra Modi and his Hindutva fascist government, and the basically his BJP, a political cat's paw for the RSS, the Hindutva fascist political organization modeled after Mussolini's black shirts and which killed Mahatma Gandhi. Narendra Modi has now fused his Hindutva or Hindu nationalist fascism with the Bosean fascism of Subhas Chandra Bose, and we talked about that in For the Record 1071 and 1072. Narendra Modi's RSS BJP regime is inextricably linked with Facebook, and we talked about that in For the Record 1074 at considerable length. We have also noted how basically Facebook has appointed the Atlantic Council, inextricably linked with U.S. intelligence, with NATO, basically an embodiment of what we talked about in For the Record 1058, 59, and 60, and that we came back to again in 1000. 72, the Christian West, a Hitlerless Reich that was fused to the U.S. and Britain during World War II. The plans for the post-World War II world were being cooked, basically hardened and fashioned in 1943 and 1944 in negotiations between representatives of the Nazi SS and Alan Dulles and William Donovan of the OSS, U.S. intelligence during World War II, as well as people working for British intelligence as well. The Atlantic Council is basically an embodiment of the Christian West, with strong links to the OUNB milieu, to fascist elements in the Baltic states, to NATO, and related elements. And the Atlantic Council superhawks on the new Cold War, ardently supportive of the OUNB's successor organizations in Ukraine. The Atlantic Council has basically been tabbed by Facebook to see to it that fake news, unquote, doesn't make it into the 2020 campaign. I think we can assume that by virtue of the fact that the Atlantic Council has been so anointed by Facebook, there will in fact be plenty of fake news, unquote, in the 2020 campaign. However, it will be fake news that will be to the satisfaction of elements like the Atlantic Council, the OUNB, successor organizations in power in Ukraine, and related elements. We have also noted how the woman who is managing things for Facebook in Ukraine is a woman named Katerina Kruk, K-R-U-K. She was a member of Svoboda, one of the OUNB successor organizations that came to power following the Maidan coup. She also has manifested many other sympathies for the OUNB milieu, sympathies for the Azov Battalion. She was tabbed by a fellow to talk one of his relatives, either a grandnephew or a grandson, into fighting with the Azov Battalion, and she said she couldn't bring herself to do it and went on to sing that fellow's praises. There was a Nazi sniper who was killed fighting for Pravi Sector. She lionized him as well. Katerina Kruk issued a tweet that lauded the burning alive of a number of anti-OUNB or anti-Euromaidan protesters in the city of Odessa. They were herded into a union hall and then burned alive, and SS and Nazi graffiti were on the building and adjacent buildings, courtesy of the arsonists/murderers. And again, that woman has been tabbed by Facebook to manage their operations in Ukraine. And so I think that in both India and in Ukraine, we are seeing a fusion of the rise of OUNB fascism in Ukraine and of the BJP/RSS, as well as Bozian fascism in India as well. And Facebook inextricably linked with both of them. We should also note that Pierre Omidyar of Intercept fame helped to finance the rise both of Narendra Modi in India and the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine, courtesy of that they came to power through the Maidan coup. Again, I can appreciate that we went into that at some length in For the Record 1074, and those excerpts and links are included in the written description for the Record 1077. So again, although we have not dealt directly with the book Surveillance Valley in this program, taking the counterinsurgency genesis and raison d'etre of the Internet from, again, Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine, that genesis/raison d'etre being counterinsurgency, the same concept, counterinsurgency, which was both the starting point for the Nazi Party in Germany and was the major focal point of SCL in Afghanistan with its counter terrorism psyops then adapted to the 2016 American campaign and anti-democratic applications, not at all unlike the communism equals, democracy equals communism ethic of Hitler's speech before the industry club of Dusseldorf in 1931. So again, the Cambridge Analytica affair epitomizes the counterinsurgency genesis of the internet and its application to a counter-democracy mode, and one that is fundamental to the rise of and sustaining of fascism. This concludes For the Record program number 1077, Surveillance Valley Part 3, Cambridge Analytica, Democracy and Counterinsurgency. This is being recorded on July 2nd of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.